Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to the studios of Radio Sai Prashant Tirulayam, giving you live broadcast every Thursday in the Asia stream of Radio Sai. As the proceedings in the Sai Kulwant Hall have ended just now, it's now time for us to get back to the studios to continue with the first session of the evening Thursday live of this Thursday. And offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Team Radio Sai's Ganesh inviting you all to yet another new episode of the Radio Sai Vedam Tutor. Today, as a part of the Vedam Tutor, you will be listening to two special talks that were delivered by Sri Raman Vedarajan and Sri N. Sudhindran as a part of the International Vedic and Multi-Faith Conference that was held during Bhagwan's 92nd birthday celebrations in Prashantilayam. Both Sri Raman and Sudhindran are alumnus of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and are currently actively involved with Swami's Veda Poshana movement along with their professional lives. Sri Raman will be speaking on the topic Influence of Vedic Wisdom on Japan. This will be followed by the talk by Sri Sudhindran on the topic Significance of Vedas and Sri Rudram, after which you will be listening to the next segment of the Evening Thursday Live, the Radio Sai Bhajan Classroom, hosted by Brother Bishu. So without any further delay, over to Sri Raman and Sri Sudhindran on the effect of Vedic knowledge on Japan and significance of Vedas and Sri Rudram.
My loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Today, I have the unique duty to read out the manuscript prepared by Professor Matsumi. Due to various ill health and technical snags, he is unable to reach here on time and present this manuscript of his. Anyway, I think he is now watching us live, and I request him to be with part of this activity. Dozo yoroshiku onegai shimasu. Okay. Om Shri Sai Ram. First of all, I offer humble pranams at the divine lotus feet of Bhagwan. Dear brothers and sisters, respected elders, Sai Ram to all of you. I am very happy to talk at the memorable and most wonderful occasion of the first International Veda Conference at Prashantinilayam. Kindly let me start with the relation between Japan and Indian Vedic culture. 1,500 years ago, only materialistic culture was prevailing in Japan. Consequently, Japanese people were suffering from diseases, scarcity of food, and disharmony in the society. However, in the year 538 AD, for the first time, Buddhism reached Japan via Indian continent. Buddhism rapidly and widely spread to the whole country. In that period, a famous sage by the name Shotoku Taishi, who governed Japan in the earliest stage of history, which appears in literatures, decided to rule the country on the basis of Buddhism. He had promulgated the very famous 17-article constitution of Japan, which begins with the Sanskrit verse and not a Chinese sutra. In the article, he requested people nationwide to respect three treasures. First was Buddha, second Dharma, and the third Sangha, society. And he clearly stated to follow the scripture properly. In the following period of Japanese history, again society suffered from widespread diseases and lack of food. At that time, the emperor Shomu had built a huge Buddha statue in the old capital of Japan called Nara. The building of the Buddha statue was the foremost important project of the government then. It is said, owing to the grace and miraculous power of Buddha, widespread diseases subsided. Even today at Todaiji, this is the tallest Buddha statue we have in Japan. And so many foreign tourists are visiting this place every year. Similar to Hinduism, we also have Shintoism, through which we worship a variety of gods, like Ganesha, Shiva, Saraswati, and Lakshmi. And each of them has a Japanese name. For example, Emperor Shomu once saw a dream of Amaterasu Omikami, who is the supreme goddess of Shintoism. In that dream, Amaterasu Omikami instructed him to construct a temple on a small island in a lake located in the northern direction from the old capital of Nara. After exploring the lake, he finally found the island as indicated by Amaterasu Omikami in his dream. And he had installed the first Saraswati temple in Japan there. Western part of Japan underwent many wars repeatedly, and many historically important temples and shrines were burned down. But in this island, Chikubushima Island, in the lake of Biwako, these important buildings remained unaffected by a number of wars due to the grace and miracle of the goddess Amaterasu Omikami. It is a strange coincidence and very special blessings of Bhagavan Baba that on the 35th anniversary of Sri Satya Sai Organization of Japan was held at this lake Biwako, and Bhagavan had sent his most chosen emissaries, including late Mr. Srinivasan, to witness the glory of Sai Saraswati, who appeared in Chikubushima Island 1000 years ago. Nowadays, majority of Japanese people believe that Buddhism came from China. But unknowingly, the Japanese people have been under the influence of Indian Vedic principle for more than 1000 years. In this manner, Japan has been receiving important influence of Vedic culture for a long time. In modern Japanese society, Veda exists as a formal or form of social morality. For example, even when foreign tourists lose their wallets during their visit, it is sent back to the embassy of their countries. It is rare in the world to find this quality of mass level social morality. Also, even when great earthquakes devastated Japan, most Japanese people stayed calmly and no robbing or no other immoral actions happened under the most difficult and challenging situation. One reason behind this high morality level in Japan is the presence of emperor. In Japan, a long time emperor had been regarded as lord of the country. As Lord Ramachandra was an emperor in India, just the same way Japanese people developed a sense of unity under the governance of the emperor. Due to the emperor system, Japanese people had learned to worship the lord, which led to high level of morality in the society. In the context of Bhagavan's teaching, one of the main purpose of his incarnation was to revive the Veda in every nation of the world. We are also undergoing the process in Japan as well. After the start of Sai activities in Japan, Japanese people did not have the opportunity to learn Vedic chanting for several decades. Japanese devotees prayed earnestly to Bhagavan so that he will bless us with such opportunity to learn Vedas. Here I take a small detour and narrate my own experience. In the year 2004, I had the opportunity to pursue my PhD in Japan. The Vedic movement also commenced during this period, and I was fortunate to be a part of this movement. It was very humbling to experience and to see number of devotees joining the class as early as 5 o'clock in winter mornings to learn Veda. Over to Matsumi. Some regular members acquired Vedic chanting efficiently in the beginning. Only a handful of Japanese devotees were chanting Vedam. But with the growing time, many more Sai students entered Japan and Veda seminars were held at many places. And gradually, many Japanese came to chant Veda. One difficulty for Japanese people in Veda learning is lack of many vocal sounds in original Japanese language. Japanese language has much fewer number of consonants and vowels and are unable to pronounce precise Vedic sounds with Japanese characters. But Japanese devotees developed and modified these Japanese characters to express all kinds of sounds which appears in the Sanskrit and Vedic script. This effort had greatly accelerated the speed of Veda learning among Japanese devotees. These days, around 300 devotees all over Japan are able to chant Veda. In the year 2007, with Bhagavan's grace, Japanese devotees were granted the first opportunity to chant Veda in His Divine Presence. On that occasion, Japan Sai Organization had also offered a live stage drama play on how Baba's miracle and episodes enabled Japan to start Veda chanting with His grace. Although it was not easy for Japanese to accurately pronounce the most difficult Vedic sounds, it is said when Baba blesses, even a dumb man can speak, and so it happened. In the early stage, we had started with relatively easy Vedic mantras. But these days, many devotees are actively learning Rudram and Chamakam, and more than 10 times of Ekadasha Parayana, Rudra Parayana, have been carried out in various cities of Japan. We believe this kind of Veda chanting has intensely purified our country in a manner that never ever happened before in the history of Japan. I am most grateful to Bhagavan for showering his Vedic mercy upon Japan. Finally, from a scientific point of view, as Swami used to say, Vedic wisdom is far more profound when compared with any other kind of science, and scientific analysis cannot be any effective tool to know about the heights of Vedic wisdom. However, science can have a glance at the depth of the Vedic science from some interesting facts. Several scientists are pointing out some important secrets hidden in the final anuvaka of Chamakam. In the first 10 anuvakas, we pray for many good desires which are required for happiness and welfare of our life. But in the 11th anuvaka, we chant a lot of numbers which comprises each of the Vedic sense. It is said the number from 1 to 33 represents the 33,000 base pairs of mitochondrial base pair of DNA. And the numbers from 4 to 48 are corresponding to 48 million nuclear bases of DNA. Further, the pair of odd numbers and even numbers appear to be expressing double helix strand of the DNA. In this manner, Chamakam includes the whole genetic information of human beings. Therefore, whenever we chant Chamakam wholeheartedly, it will help us to retrieve inherent power and potential of human being as created by the Lord himself. But however deep the Vedic science may be, whether we, the scientists, or not, our best policy will be to taste the beautiful vibration of Vedam as a scientist, rather than as a scientist. Om Shri Sai Ram.
Om Ganeshaya Namaha, Sarasvatyai Namaha, Shri Gurubhyo Namaha, Harihi Om. Vagartaviva sampriktau vagartav pratipattaye jagatav pitarav vande parvati parameshwarau namas sabhabhyas sabhapatibhyaschavo namaha. Om Shri Sai Ram. I offer my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Respected guests, revered elders, and my dear brothers and sisters, Sai Ram to all of you. It's my good fortune that I have been blessed with this opportunity to be here in this assembly of Vedic scholars, scientists, and spiritual seekers. Our loving Sai Veda Mata has brought us all together in her loving embrace in order to feed us with the Jnanamritam, the nectar of the Vedic knowledge. And I am sure that the benefits of this Veda conference will not be just limited to us sitting here in this hall, but will envelop the entire universe and uplift the mankind. The Vedas are called the Apaurusheya. They have not been created or composed by human beings, which then begs the question as to who created the Vedas. It is declared in the Brihadaranyak Upanishad, Yasya Nishvasitam Vedaha. The Vedas are the breath of God. And therefore it follows, just like how one's life and breath are interrelated, so also the Godhead and the Vedas are eternally interrelated. That's what Swami used to call the Avinabhava Sambandham. One cannot exist without the other. And that's why it is natural that Bhagwan laid a lot of importance to the Vedas. It is said, Vedokhilo Dharma Moolam. The Vedas form the root of Dharma. And therefore, Bhagwan's mission was Dharma Sthapana in conjunction with Veda Poshana, because both cannot be separated. And it may be quite interesting to note here the name of Bhagwan's residences are closely interrelated with the Vedas. For example, take the Yajur Mandir right here in Prashanthi Nilayam, the Trayi Brindavan at Whitefield, Bangalore, the Sai Shruti at Kodaikanal. Yajur, Trayi, Shruti are all synonyms of the Vedas. And therefore Bhagwan, in all his divine wisdom, has indicated that the Lord resides in the Vedas. And therefore, the sure way of attaining God is by following the Vedic path. It is so full of symbolism. In fact, the Vedas are full of symbolism and are highly cryptic in nature. As the previous speaker mentioned, that there are 6 meanings of every word in Sanskrit in the Vedas. And therefore the Vedas lend themselves to varied interpretations. That's why Bhagwan warns us that one should not be led astray by the superficial meaning, but should deep dive to find out the core inner truth. Swami used to say, Sai, S-A-I, see always inside and know the inner truth of the Vedas. Let me just illustrate this truth with an example. In the 9th anuvaka of the Dhammakam, it says, Namo Goshtyaya cha Grushyaya cha. Salutations to Lord Rudra, who resides in the cowsheds and at homes. Well, one may think the Supreme Being, after all, pervades and permeates the entire universe, and therefore it's but natural that God in the form of the cows resides in the cowsheds and God in the form of humans reside in homes. But the Vedic scholar Shainacharya had a different interpretation to this. He didn't stop with just this. He interpreted this very same verse as salutations to Lord Rudra, who resides in our minds and bodies. Cowsheds and homes to minds and bodies. Intriguing, isn't it? Let me explain. As you're all aware, all of us are made of the pancha koshas, the annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, and anandamaya kosha, that signify the physical body, the life force, the mind, intellect, and the spirit or the soul. Now, in the Brahmanandavalli of the Taittiriya Upanishad, it says, Anyontaratma manomayaha tenaisha purnaha sava esha purusha vidha eva tasya purusha vidhatam anvayam purusha vidhaha tasya yajure vashidaha rukdakshinav pakshaha samottara pakshaha Adesha Atma Atharvangirasah Puchham Pratishtha Tadapyesha Shloko Bhavati. It said that the mind or the Manomaya Kosha, it is conceptualized as having a human form with the limbs of the four Vedas. The Rig, Yajur, Sama and Atharva. And therefore, and the Vedic knowledge or the knowledge is established in one's mind. And therefore, when you read this in conjunction with the verse from Namakkam, it will then become very clear that it will become salutation to Lord Rudra, who resides in the form of knowledge in our mind. And that is actually the true meaning of Namo Goshtya Yacha. Wonderful, isn't it? The metaphor of the cowshed referring to the human mind full of the knowledge. Let us now come to the second part. Namo Grishya Yacha. Salutations to the one who resides in homes. You will all be very familiar with this sentence that goes like Deho Devalaya Prokto Jivo Devas Sanatanaha. The human body is eulogized as the residence of God in the form of Atman. And therefore, this is a home for God. And now, if you put everything together, you will then realize why Shainacharya interpreted this Namo Goshtya Yacha Grushya Yacha as salutations to Lord Rudra, who resides in the form of knowledge in our minds, and to salutations to Lord Rudra, who resides in our bodies as the Atman or Brahman or God. This is just a small verse from the Namakkam, which is filled with such an abstract meaning. Do you then begin to realize the depth and the profundity of the entire body of Vedic knowledge? It is really mind-boggling. That's why it is said, Ananto vai Vedaha. The Vedas are infinite, and no man can claim to have read and understood and grasped the entire Vedas. Only God is the true knower and composer of the Vedas. And that's why Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, says, Vedaischa sarvairahameva vedyo vedanta krit veda videva chaham. Bhagavan Baba has mentioned that living with God is true education. And in that respect, the students of Sri Satya Sai Institute, education institutions, are very fortunate to have been blessed with the divine proximity, the Divya Sannidhi in their lives. And Bhagwan has been much more compassionate to those who were part of the Vedam group, for he blessed us with the chance of reciting the Vedas in his immediate divine physical presence. And on one of those occasions, when we were chanting the mantra Pushpam, Bhagwan called me and asked me to translate the mantra Pushpam into English. So as we were chanting the mantra Pushpam, verse by verse, I was translating that into English. This was progressing, and then Bhagwan called me again and asked me, do you know the essence of mantra Pushpam? I pleaded my ignorance and I prayed to Swami, Swami, you should reveal the true essence of the mantra Pushpam to all of us. Swami then mentioned that the inner significance, the essence of the mantra Pushpam is Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. Now if you analyze the refrain that occurs in the mantra Pushpam, Ya evam veda yopamayatanam veda ayatanavan bhavati. It is said in the mantra Pushpam that the one who knows the source of the five elements, the sun, moon, stars, clouds and the entire creation, becomes one with the source. Now let us just go back to the Brahmananda Valli on which the previous speaker, Professor Anil Kumar, dwelt upon in quite a detail. It says, Tasmadva etasmadatmana akasha sambhutaha akashad vayuhu vayor agnihi agnerapaha adhya prithivi prithivya oshadhayaha oshadhibhyonam annat purushaha sava esha purushon narasamajaha. So it says that from the Atman or God or Brahman originated all this entire creation, and therefore the source of all this creation is Brahman. And therefore when you read the mantra Pushpam and this sentence from Brahmananda Valli in conjunction, you will then realize the truth behind what Bhagwan said. He said, Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. When you realize that the source of the entire creation is Brahman, you become one with the source, you become one with the Brahman. Such an elaborate mantra, but Swami wonderfully encapsulated that in a small, sweet and simple manner. Brahmavit Brahmaiva Bhavati. No wonder that when a devotee innocently asked the Vedic scholar of yore, Brahmashri Kamavadhani Garu, as to whether Bhagwan knew the Vedas, he smiled and he replied, Aya, there is no need to even question whether he knows the Vedas, because every word that he utters are themselves verily the Vedas. So this entire conference is but a blessing by Bhagwan to all of us in order to realize the importance of Vedas, to appreciate the Vedas and also reaffirm our faith in Bhagwan's teaching, because the Vedas and Bhagwan's teachings are not different. They are one and the same. It is when we discuss in this conference about the science behind the Vedas, I want to take a minute to get into the science of chanting the Vedas. Now it is said, you know, what are the don'ts of chanting? That has been captured in a verse. It is said, Giti shigri shirah kampi tatha likita patakaha anarthajnaha alpakantascha shadaite pataka dhamaha. The don'ts of chanting the Vedas are Giti, to chant it in a sing-song manner. Shigri, to chant it very fast. Shirah kampi, to chant it shaking one's hand and one's head like singing a song. And likita patakaha, to read, to chant the Vedas while referring to the book. Most of us do that, I admit. Anarthajnaha, to not to be aware of the meaning of the Vedas when we chant it. Alpakantaha, to chant it in a very feeble voice. When we do these things, we don't derive the entire benefits of chanting the Vedas. Like how the previous speaker in Kulwanthal mentioned, how the power of the Vedic sounds uplifts us. We then don't get the entire benefit of chanting the Vedas. And therefore, one should always chant the Vedas by giving importance to the pronunciation and the intonation. They form the life breath of the Vedas. There's a story from the Vedas where it says that a Tvashta had prayed to beget a son who could kill his enemy Indra. So, and when he performed the yajna and the worship for that, the sentence that he used was, as a prayer was, Indra Shatru Vardhasva. He chanted this same verse with an intention that may my son kill my enemy Indra. But due to the change in the intonations, the result was, the meaning got changed to indicate, may my son be killed by my enemy Indra. And that's what happened. And therefore it is very important that we know and realize the science behind the Vedas, respect it and abide by that, so that we can enjoy the benefit of the Vedas. In conclusion, I have just one request to all of you. We all strive hard to protect our life breath. We should strive much harder to protect, to preserve, and to promote the life breath of God, that is the Vedas. With these few words, I express my gratitude to Bhagwan and Sri Satya Sai Seva organizations for having given me this opportunity to be in your midst and share a few thoughts of mine. Thank you all for your patient listening. Jai Sai Ram.